This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Pediatrician Dr. Eric Ridlin joins us in studio. Thank you so much for coming by.
Good evening. Thank you.
The best place to start, of course, to remind folks, the phone number is 977-1070. We're going to be talking in this hour about children and their health in America today. And give us a little Eric Ridlin 101, where you're from and your background. You've been practicing your clinical experience now for 25 years.
Yes, sir. I did my undergraduate and my medical training at the University of Miami. For those that don't like the University of Miami, don't turn us off just yet. finished in 1981 and did my residency. And ever since that, I've been in clinical practice, gradually moving over more toward a holistic means of treating children. Although I do still prescribe medications, I try to look for underlying cause instead of putting a Band-Aid on by using medications.
Now, you have had a practice in Miami as well as in the Washington area, correct, for a long time. And you recently set up shop here in Charlottesville. What brings you to Central Virginia?
Well, I wasn't in Washington, although I grew up there. I didn't have a practice there, although I had three practice locations in South Florida. The long and short answer to that is that about 15, 16 years ago, I had a vision of being part of a holistic healing center where the various different alternative practitioners, although we don't like the term alternative, but health-related or holistic practitioners would work together for the benefit of an individual child. I only treat children. And therefore, we could take somebody that has a very serious illness, and we can team work together. Or if I happen to see someone that needs the care of a craniosacral therapist, a chiropractor, or acupuncturist, or somebody that does massage, or a nutritionist, or whatever it might be, although I do a lot of the work with nutrition, we could send them down the hall. We could work with detoxing. We could work with teaching people how to feed their kids right and getting them to eat right, et cetera, so that we can take children that have serious problems and work together instead of working in separate different areas.
What is holistic health? Explain that to us. We hear it so much. We hear it more and more and more. But tell us, as someone who practices it, what exactly are you doing?
Sure. There are different terms, actually, for what I do. Holistic is one thing. It's the easiest thing for people to kind of bite into, if you will. Holistic health involves treating a patient, in this case, children, because I deal with children, with natural means, working with diet, for example, working with a digestive tract, eliminating yeast infections, most often naturally, although I do have the ability to prescribe medications. So, for example, a lot of children have low thyroid, and we can prescribe thyroid medication for that. It's a very common thing these days that that people just don't look for because they don't do the proper tests. So we can prescribe medications, and sometimes we'll continue to prescribe medications while we're working on weaning them off by building their system up, either by eliminating foods or environmental exposures or whatever that might be causing the problem, or building the body up in the way of using supplements, for example, herbs, working with the intestinal tract with digestive enzymes or things for yeast, those types of things. We're working with natural means most of the time to take care of the underlying cause, again, instead of just trying to put some kind of a symptom-controlling medication or a Band-Aid, if you will, on top of it.
Pediatrician, holistic pediatrician, Dr. Eric Ridlin is our guest, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you have a question about your child's health or the health of children today, we invite you to join the conversation. You are also the founder and developer of Kids Wellness, a brand that we're certainly familiar with in our home, and that's at kidswell.com. Give me some of the thinking behind the Kids Wellness brand, the line, and exactly what is it?
Well, that came out of my practice itself. I've been using herbs in my practice for around about 18 years. What I did in the beginning was we would combine different herbs in different ratios, and people would have to buy four or five, six different bottles for one different thing. For one condition, rather, not a different thing. And some of them would have alcohol. They'd need to be evaporated. Alcohol isn't something we want to be giving to children. Some of them were good preparations. Some of them weren't good preparations. And there were varying different qualities out of there in the market. So we found that the children, the people were having difficulty making them, mixing them, putting them together. Taste was a factor. It was difficult to get them in. Children. And it was a very difficult process to get children to use these herbal products. So over a period of time, it came to me that basically there wasn't anything out there that was appropriate for my practice for these different conditions. I decided to make my own originally just for my practice, but now it's also available in retail outlets, and it is available in a couple other retail outlets here in Charlottesville.
Dr. Eric Ridlin is our guest. Are you finding that more parents and caregivers are open to approaching their child's health holistically? What has been the changes you've seen in the culture, let's just put it that way, over the last 25 years?
When I first started doing this, when I first came out in practice 25 years ago, it was, I think people perceived me as coming from Mars and that there was something wrong with me, maybe had horns or whatever. It really wasn't something that was very popular, although I wasn't doing anything near what I'm doing now because I've had to spend some time educating and retooling, if you will. But there's been a gradual trend, especially as the medications are really not helping a lot of children. The problem in pediatrics is that we can patch children up, we can send them to specialists, we can deal with these things for a period of time and kind of make them limp into adulthood where an adult doctor who does alternative medicine or holistic medicine can fix them up. Why should we have to wait? We start from the beginning trying to get children on a healthy track rather than waiting until they're a little bit older. But we've seen more and more interest in this type of a thing, especially as we use more and more medications, vaccines, et cetera, that really don't seem to be helping a lot. They just tend to be creating vicious cycles in these children, antibiotics over and over again, steroids over and over again, and an ever-increasing cadre of vaccines that we're exposing our children to.
And of course, Virginia now is joining a few other states in legislating and requiring us to use yet another vaccine, which
right.
Folks may not know about, but the Virginia legislature is deciding as we speak, they're voting yes, to require, middle-aged school girls to get a vaccine against cervical cancer. It's three shots, the total package, I think, is hundreds of dollars, and that's what we're seeing. I'm very opinionated on this, but I think we have, you know, we have pharmaceutical companies who have basically taken over public health through very, very powerful and strong lobbying. And we have them now deciding, hey, let's get legislators to require a citizenry to buy our product. They'll be required to buy it by law.
Right.
What are
right.
your thoughts on this?
Right.
Because, you know, there was a time when vaccines, there were just a few, you know, 20, 30 years ago,
sure.
And now kids are just jab, 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 jab.
Right. When I first came out in practice, we had three vaccines, and there were ways of getting around them. In those days, there weren't as many people putting their children in daycare and preschool where these vaccines have become mandatory. So there were three vaccines, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, the polio vaccine, which was the live or the polio drops, and there was a DTP vaccine. All three of which really have problems with them, but we didn't see that much of a problem with it because we gave so few vaccines. Then we came in, starting around 1984, when the HIV vaccine came out, we started adding vaccines one at a time. And then since the early 90s, we're adding vaccines, at the rate sometimes of two or three a year to the compulsory regimen. There has been some good in vaccines in that you can argue whether they eliminate diseases or not or whether they're necessary. And certainly we could talk about vaccines for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And I do. But we've taken the mercury out of most children's vaccines. That had to be a public push. It wasn't anything that the doctors or the drug companies were behind. In fact, they were pushing against it. But fortunately, Congress took the mercury or thimerosal out of vaccines in 2001. And fortunately, we changed from the live polio vaccine, which was actually giving people polio, to the dead polio vaccine around 2000. But then again, there were adding more and more of these vaccines and even making it mandatory, compulsory for babies to get hepatitis B vaccine, which hepatitis B, for listeners don't know about it, is almost exclusively, not totally, but almost exclusively spread through exchange of blood and body fluids, through sexual transmission, through drug use.
And yet we make days-old infants take this shot.
Right, and the problem with that is that the immunity from these vaccines will wear off at some point in time. The high risk for that disease is between 14 and 30, and of course, children, adolescents, young adults can modulate or decrease their risk by doing certain things, which we won't get into. I assume this is a family show.
Right, right.
But the immunity isn't going to last for somebody until they're 20 years old. That's why we're seeing this mumps epidemic at the University of Virginia recently, because the immunity from the childhood vaccines is wearing off by the time the kids get to college or a little bit afterwards. Same thing's going to happen with chickenpox. It'll continue on down the road. So what we're going to have to do is reinforce these vaccines for lifetime.
So we're going to see a push perhaps on the part of pharmaceutical industries to legislate boosters now.
Right. I think so.
Which means billions to them.
Absolutely. But if the Congress or the courts ever get wind of all these things that are all the complications and side effects and problems from the vaccines, the payout for this is going to be, it's going to dwarf what's going on with the tobacco industry, for example. Once this really gets out, they have a vested interest in protecting protecting the courts from allowing certain things to be quote-unquote related to vaccines, like the MMR autism controversy.
Yeah. Well, let's explore some of these ideas in the next half of this program. We're talking with Dr. Eric Ridlin, and we'll continue this conversation on the other side of this break. This is Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070 WINA. Phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you've got a question or a comment. For Dr. Eric Ridlin, 25 years of clinical experience in holistic health, working with children, a pediatrician, joins us in studio to talk about children's health issues today. We were talking in the first half of this program, and you raised the subject of vaccines and side effects and autism. My wife and I certainly believe, after years of dealing with autism in our family, that the mercury in the vaccines had something to do with it, and that the heavy metals in our environment have something to do with what we're seeing
Sure.
among children. Of course, autism has shot up over 1,000% in America since the early 90s, and the latest studies show that 1 in 150 children now are on the autistic spectrum. What are your thoughts on this? I know that you work with children with autism. I know that you've my guess is you've been seeing more and more children come into your practice that are presenting symptoms of being on the spectrum and of raising some of your concerns.
Sure. The one thing that's very difficult to gauge is because I've gotten on all these different lists. So I have a lot of these kids coming in because of the fact that they're looking for different ways of managing the condition, or the parents are. Before I went to my first conference on autism, these were the DAN conferences, Defeat Autism Now.
Right.
In Chicago in 98, I think it was. I had one autistic child in my practice. When I left Florida, I had 200. Now that doesn't mean that there's a 200-fold increase. It just means that I'm seeing a lot more of it and dealing with it a lot more. But as you said, the increase in frequency is definitely there. There's no question about it. When I first came in practice, the statistics were somewhere around 1 in 200, 2,500 to 1 in 5,000 25 years ago. And now it ranges anywhere from 1 in 150 to 1 in 200. Now, why is that? Certainly vaccines, I think, have a lot to do with it, but we're also dealing with a lot of health issues in children. We're seeing frequent ear infections. We're seeing a lot of antibiotics. We're seeing kids that have asthma at an astounding rate. Even though we have this whole armamentarium of medications for asthma, we're seeing increased fatalities with asthma, despite the fact that we have much better management capability. Why is that? Well, I think it has a lot to do with our quality of our diet, quality of the environment. I think it has to do with the fact that people don't believe that vitamins are essential for kids. They're not getting the nutrients that they need. This is now about the fifth or sixth generation that we've since we've introduced processed foods. So now we're having processed foods. We're dispensing a lot of this stuff at school. The kids aren't getting the right foods to eat at school because they have to get something that they will eat. So they're eating pizza and hamburgers and Cokes and even worse, Diet Cokes with the sugar substitutes. It's hard to believe that toxic substances like aspartame even got on the market in the first place. We fluoridated our water supplies that caused problems. The vaccines, we don't want to leave out the fact that, of course, they've taken out the mercury, but there's still aluminum and dozens of other different toxic chemicals in the vaccines.
And they haven't taken mercury thimerosal out of the flu shots. It's still in there as
That's right. That's right. So there are some vaccines in children that do have it, but certainly it's far better than what it was. And there are some studies that show that autism is either cresting or maybe coming down slightly. But I don't think we're going to get it down to where we were before unless we either cut back on some of the lesser important vaccines. And I believe that vaccines work, but they work at a cost. You know, so we have to really figure out what we're doing. The vaccine for these teen girls, now Gardasil or for HPV, which is a STD that does cause cervical cancer, but we're giving now 9-year-olds, we're giving vaccines against an STD, which to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Next thing we're going to be doing is giving that to newborns too, like we did with hepatitis B.
Dr. Eric Ridlin is a holistic pediatrician with 25 years of clinical experience. Our guest in studio, if you'd like to join the conversation or you have a question, the phone number is 977-1070. Tom is on the line in Charlottesville. Tom, thank you for the call. You're on with Dr. Ridlin.
Thank you, Dr. Ridlin and Coy. Every year listen to news stories on radio and TV and read articles in the newspaper about the flu shot. And I am constantly annoyed by an omission that occurs in the reporting when they're always saying that there's no way you can get the flu from the flu shot. However, I really feel like that's incomplete information. In my own case, in my early 20s, after never being sick, I started taking the flu shot, and I, every year, for 5 consecutive years, got flu symptoms. And I was convinced the flu shot was giving me the flu. However, later, it was discovered that I had a reaction to the thimerosal, which gave me symptoms that were very similar to the flu and made me very sick. And I discovered that when I started using eye drops that had the preservative thimerosal and got an infection from that. And I feel like that's information that's never completely given to people, that in fact you can get pretty sick from the flu shot just from the thimerosal.
That's absolutely right, and it can be from other things, too. Now, a lot of vaccines will sometimes cause symptoms a lot like the disease because they have the organism in it. They have the flu organism in it. The problem with the flu shot is that unless they guess, they have to prepare these vaccines a year in advance, so they're hoping that the strain that they're trying to figure out or trying to put into the vaccine is going to be the strain that hits. It's a hit or miss type of a proposition. Sometimes it works very well, sometimes it doesn't. But certainly there can be a lot of side effects from that vaccine and from other vaccines. Now we're recommending for children to give 2 flu shots between 6 months and 2 years, despite the fact that these children really are not that exceedingly high risk, although that certainly could be argued. There is some risk to flu, but the shot has a lot of risks to it too that really are not explained or told to people at the physician's office. We really don't get full information on this because the information that comes to most physicians is from all of what the pharmaceutical industry wants to tell us so that we're more likely to promote their product.
I've actually I'm sorry, doctor. I've actually had physicians even tell me that thimerosal is no longer used as preservative in flu shots, and then they looked at the case and found the ingredients and did discover that it is still there in most cases, and I've never been able to find it, although they say that preservative-free flu shots are available. Every time I come down to the health department and look for them, they can't seem to locate them for me.
Well, I think they are available. I don't give flu shot in my practice, so I have not really looked into it in detail. I usually refer people to the National Vaccine Information Center website. There's a link to mercury content of vaccines. Their website is 909shot.com. I believe they also have NVIC for National Vaccine Information Center.com. But they have that link so you can actually look at this yourself without having to, sort through a lot of information and read the PDR and et cetera, et cetera. There's actually that information available to the public.
And to my knowledge, the standard flu shot has 25 micrograms of thimerosal, which is ethyl mercury,
right,
which is literally a poison, and it has never been tested and approved. It was grandfathered in the 1930s, and they still continue to use it, and yet they refuse to test it. Because it would never pass, given the standards we have today, but it was grandfathered in.
I believe there are actually studies that they're
controversial, but I'm with you, Coy, all the way from personal experience.
Tom, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Look forward to hearing from you again.
Yeah, I believe there are actually studies that show the ethyl mercury was toxic back in the 30s, but it's probably hidden in a vault somewhere.
Yeah.
there was an interesting article by one of the Kennedys in Rolling Stone magazine,
right,
about 2-3 years ago about thimerosal being introduced in vaccines in the 1930s and the first cases of autism in the 1940s. I think all this information's out there. I think they know this stuff, but it's a great preservative. It works. But mercury is so, so toxic. It isn't something that belongs in our bodies. We really need to get rid of it.
Dr. Eric Ridlin is our guest. Go ahead.
I was going to say even for adults, I obviously deal with the younger age of the spectrum, but even for adults, they shouldn't be getting this stuff. I wouldn't put it in my body.
The phone number is 977-1070, 977-1070. If you've got a comment or a question about your child's health or vaccines or the flu shot, we'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about, if we can, food allergies. I know when I was growing up, I never heard one thing about people being allergic to peanuts. And now,
right,
it's everybody talks about it,
right,
and you're not allowed to take peanuts to your kids. Our kids are literally not allowed to take anything peanut-related in their snack bag to preschool.
Sure.
Every handout we get says, please keep peanuts away from the school. And
I don't know if you've noticed it, but airlines also have stopped serving peanuts. I do a lot of flying because I still see my patients in Florida once a month. But there are no more peanuts. I have one child in my practice that would start wheezing anytime he smelled peanut butter. I got an email about a year or so ago from the National Vaccine Information Center. They seem to indicate that there's a link between the ever increasing rate of food allergies, serious food allergies, and we can talk about sensitivities that are different things, and the vaccines. Because vaccines, what they do is they shift the body from an immune-fighting mechanism to an autoimmune mechanism. So many times it will fight itself and cause autoimmune diseases. For example, there are at least anecdotal information, in addition to autism, that there may be increases in diabetes, in lupus, in MS, multiple sclerosis, associated with vaccines, all because the body is, instead of fighting the diseases... And maybe it also has to do with our germophobia. You see people all the time with these hand wipes and these little...
I got one right here, this little Purell hand sanitizer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're sanitizing everything. Nobody gets anything with any germs anymore. Our foods are washed and scrubbed, and they take that good bacteria that are on the outside of our foods, and they get rid of them. So we're not getting these things into our system. Our bodies have become so weak from an immune standpoint that we can't fight things off. And then on top of that, we're shifting the body to try to stay away from these bad diseases. And a lot of these diseases that we have with vaccines are bad diseases, no question, and they still do exist. But instead of allowing the body to fight different things, we're now killing everything that comes its way, so the body doesn't have to, the immune system doesn't ever get the workout. It doesn't ever get the stimulation. So now there are more problems with food allergies because of that,
it,
I think.
Wasn't there a time, I remember my mother telling me that when she was a kid, that they would have these parties with kids who had measles or chickenpox.
Chicken
and they
pox,
would they
yeah,
would get them all together
parties, yeah.
So that you're so that you would purposely give your child chickenpox or measles. So that they would get it over with,
sure,
versus a vaccine.
Sure. And now there's another problem with chickenpox that you may or may not be aware. Older people, and I'm kind of getting to that point myself, so I shouldn't speak, but there's an increasing rate of shingles in senior citizens, in older adults. There's a theory now, the reason why that's happening is that the children are not getting chickenpox, so therefore the adults don't get that boost of their immunity and it comes out as shingles later on. But don't worry, we have a shingles vaccine to take care of the problem.
Oh, my goodness. Dr. Eric Ridlin is our guest. He's the founder and developer of the Kids Wellness line of holistic products online at kidswell.com, and he has recently set up practice here in our neck of the woods in central Virginia after practicing for a quarter of a century in southern Florida. What are your thoughts about what parents should be keeping in mind? I'm just sitting here thinking about, is there anything in particular that you think parents, most of the parents you deal with, don't know or perhaps don't understand? And I guess we've talked about some of that today, but, you know, if you have an opportunity to speak to a parent, is there one thing that they that you, based on, you know, 25 years of seeing sick children, one thing that you would really like to get across to parents today?
Oh, one thing. I think that I would start with, and a lot of times people already know this, so it's not like it's an unknown, but I really would start with, we got to start feeding our kids right. You know, we got to stay away from the junk food. I think all kids need nutritional supplements because we don't get these things in our foods today. We need to go more toward organic products because they have less of the chemicals. They're not chemical free. There's no question because they get watered by the same rain that goes through the same polluted air that conventional products would. The kids aren't getting enough water to drink. Lifestyle. Exercise, sunshine, of course, and again, sunshine is very difficult when you got this white stuff falling out of the sky.
Right.
And I think we need to be very careful about medications. We need to be very, we need to make sure that those medications are the right things. We don't give antibiotics for colds. Anybody knows that. But yet there are physicians that are still doing it to keep their patients happy. We need to stay away from these strong medicines. They're causing a lot of problems in our body.
Because a parent comes in with a kid with a really bad cold and or an ear infection and says, you know, give him an antibiotic, give him it. It's the doctor, in some cases, really treating the parent there.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Prescribes an antibiotic. When, in fact, if you waited a few days, the kid's probably going to be fine.
Right. Ear infection's a good example. There are some good clinical studies now that show that 85 to 90% of ear infections will go away without antibiotics. The medical profession now, the latest studies are saying, let's not give antibiotics unless it's a chronic, it continues on for a while, or there are problems with it. I've been treating ear infections holistically for, ever since my daughter, my 20-year-old, was 4 months old. She's the first child I ever used, I ever treated an ear infection without antibiotics. I've been doing it for 20 years, and we have about a 95 to 97% success rate with using natural products versus using the antibiotics. And of course it has very few, if any, there occasionally can be side effects even from natural. Natural doesn't mean side effect free. It just means that they're far fewer and there aren't the problems in the body that we would see with some of these very strong pharmaceuticals.
Dr. Eric Ridlin recently set up practice in Central Virginia and 25 years of clinical experience. Thank you so much for coming in, and let's see if we can't get you back in here again to talk pediatric health.
It certainly was a pleasure. I really enjoyed this, and thank you for inviting me.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com. charlottesville.com. You folks have a great night. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.